couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you are listening to an exciting new episode of Fat Guys the Movies.
And we're is that how you're going to start the show
that
now?
That is how I'm going to start the show.
Is that your Charles Nelson Reilly impression?
I guess. I don't know. It's
I don't know what that
is. I have to explain, we're recording early this week, and I don't mean early in the week. I mean early in the morning, at least for me.
The schedule was early in the morning. It kind of turned into mid-morning
yeah.
the time we actually
And of course, like these things always go when you are, a social butterfly such as myself.
Mm-hmm.
When we record early in the morning, it means that I get no sleep. So if I'm a little
I'm sure
loopy,
you look more like a social caterpillar.
Oh, boy. I really don't have any response to that because my brain's not working yet.
It's actually been an interesting show prep with you because
it's
yeah,
kind of
you,
been
you
all
are
over the place.
You're at a loss for words, and you're surprisingly giddy about it.
I'm okay with it. I really am. I got to watch Back to the Future trilogy. And I watched Marmaduke this week, so even though I haven't seen any Saw movie, I did see Marmaduke.
What was your opinion of Marmaduke?
It's really funny.
Oh my god.
I giggled a lot.
How drunk were you?
I wasn't drunk at all.
Maybe it was the company you were with.
I just,
that movie wasn't that good.
It was just silly. Silly town.
Yeah.
And so I enjoyed that.
Surfing and dancing dogs you're totally awesome with, right?
Yes, dancing.
Did you watch this movie? You paused there for a minute, like you're like, was that in the film?
No, the dancing dogs thing doesn't come till the end.
It's still in the movie. I mean, it's still not a bizarre thing to say at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have no idea what we're talking about. Anyway, you are listening to Fat Guys in the Movies. Here's how you can get a hold of us. We're going to talk this week about Saw and Conviction and other things of note. But in the meantime, here's how you can get a hold of us, fatguysofthemovies.com. You can go on iTunes, subscribe to the show, and review the show, and give us 3, 4, or 0 stars. You can email us, fatguysoffilmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, area code 740-205-6456. You can also get us on the Facebook, search Fat Guys of the Movies.
Actually, I think it's just facebook.com per Justin Timberlake.
Right, per Justin Timberlake? Why does he care?
You haven't seen this. You haven't seen The Social Network, have you?
No.
Okay. Well, it's a joke lost on you.
Okay. Per the guy who started Napster, it's
yeah.
It's that. And you can get us on the Twitter. You can get me at twitter.com/rejects. And Kevin is twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Boom.
So there's that. So how are you doing this week, Kevin?
I'm doing okay. I'm getting into Halloween mode. This is our big fat Halloween special. I just dropped that on you now, and the only reason is because
it is
Halloween weekend. Ooh, spooky. That is it. That is the preparation we had for the big fat Halloween special.
Yeah.
But I carved jack-o'-lanterns last night, and if you follow me on Fat Guys at the Movies on Facebook or on Twitter, you'll see I have a little avatar as my, because everyone pumpkinizes their avatar, and mine's my face on a pumpkin, and it actually looks really cool. Tried to carve that into a pumpkin, absolute freaking disaster. It looks like it's throwing up. It doesn't even work. But I did do a Jack Skellington pumpkin jack-o'-lantern. It looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's it. I'm just doing a
yep.
Halloween stuff. I got to get the kids' Halloween costumes together, but it's awesome.
What are
here,
you going to be for Halloween?
You know, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be because I said it's got to match my look, which is fat guy with no hair but a goatee. And when I threw the out for suggestions to people on Facebook and Twitter, and I'm like suggestions, people are saying stuff that didn't fit. You know, like somebody actually suggested I go as Neil Miller's beard. And I was like, well,
my beard isn't quite as prolific.
Not anymore. Did you trim that sucker back a little bit?
Well, it's, you know, I don't know.
Inquiring minds like Jeff Hall.
You know,
it's
been longer. It's been bushier. It's right now. It's just kind of in a mid stage. You are aware of Luke Mullen on the Twitter,
mm-hmm.
right?
He's got a beard
at LD Mullen. He has the most.
He's got a beard to reckon with.
Yes, he has.
I mean, he could like spin around and knock people out with his beard.
He has perhaps the most prolific beard of all time. So it's not a Luke Mullen beard, but it is. It, you know, it's impressive as it always is. So if you were to go, you know, for Halloween as my beard, I'm sure that lots of ladies would be after you.
Would run screaming. The two options I had is I said I could either be Captain Spaulding from House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects, because he's bald and has a beard. Or I could be Fat Satan.
Yeah.
You know, like Satan before Slim Fast. And like, but I just don't want to have to paint my whole face red. I mean, you can get a costume, but who? I wanted to like be like fat, out of work, pre-Slim Fast Satan, where I have like a red wife beater shirt and like have red sweatpants and sandals and socks.
Yeah,
I thought that would be fun. I'd have to explain it to everybody though.
Yeah, so. I blanked out there. I'm sorry. What did you say?
What are you gonna go for as Halloween?
I haven't decided yet. I may dress up need as a Powerpuff Girl or something to come along and help me out with a costume, because normally I just throw together whatever. This year,
are you like the Adam Sandler? I'm Mr. Cup on the Head.
Yeah, I'm just a guy. I can only do so many different variations of film blogger. You know, yes. Fat film blogger, really fat film blogger.
I think you should go as Horatio.
Used to be fat film blogger.
I think you should go as Horatio Sanz, because I think you look like him before he lost his weight.
Okay. I could go as my own doppelganger. Although wow, the Alamo Drafthouse, they're having a party at the Highball, and it's a zombie prom.
Ooh.
So I could go as a zombie film blogger.
That's true.
But I've been a zombie already once this year, and I don't think I, no matter what kind of makeup job I could do myself, it could not be as good as the one I did for the short film that I was in. So
that's true. I saw that. You looked very promising.
Man,
as a
it was
zombie.
So cool. So, you know, who knows? Who knows what I'll be? I may be nothing. I may just be guy with wig. I may just
guy
get a
smiling.
Wig.
You should dress up as your own beard.
I should dress up as my That's awesome. Or just get a fake beard and be an even more bearded version of myself.
You like have the big beard, and then when somebody like gets you mad at a party and yelling at them, you rip the beard off and there's like a beard underneath it,
yep.
Like an airplane with the sunglasses.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be awesome.
I'm down.
I'd buy that for a dollar. Well, you know, we're almost at the end of this segment because we've been talking about nothing, which is awesome because we really don't have a whole lot to say.
Yeah,
in this
we're
episode.
Really just trying to kill time at this point.
But let's go ahead and introduce this movie, and then we can talk about how we didn't see it after we come back from the break.
Fair enough.
The first one we're going to be talking about is Saw 3D, and there's more blood, more torture, more wackety-schmackety devices, and all of it is in 3D.
Help us!
I want to play a game. Since the beginning, you have watched others suffer. Now it is your turn to play. Game over.
Neither of us got to see this because they didn't screen it for... Well, they screened it for a couple people, I think. I heard that some people
maybe
saw
in
it.
L.A.
Yeah. I just heard some buzz from people who... claimed to have seen. They may have been like early sneaks that were like fan oriented, but we'll talk a little bit more about us not having seen the movie when we get back.
Yeah, exactly. And we are back here on Fat Guys Movies, and we are rolling through.
Rolling,
we haven't actually talked about anything yet.
No,
we did introduce Saw in the last minute of the last segment there. And I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I've never seen any of the Saw movies.
That does not surprise me one bit. knowing how you are with horror movies.
Yeah.
And by the time you actually... I'll let you in on... Just sort of like from my perspective is, I know you never really liked horror movies, and then of course you were reviewing movies, and like 2007, 2008 was when you were seeing them because you had to, because it was part of your job. But that's when you really started actually watching many horror movies. And by that time, it was like Saw 5 or 6, and they never did screenings for those anyways.
Yeah. I also just don't like scary movies.
Yeah.
I think that's really the big one, is I'm not into movies where imminent torture is the main narrative device.
Yeah. Well,
and
a lot of people do dismiss the Saw movies as torture porn, and they're really not. I mean, there's a certain bizarre morality behind them, and they're actually, mm-hmm. as a series, relatively well written. They're grisly, and there's a lot of violence, and there are people having awful things happening to them, but mm-hmm. It's more than just that. It's not like Captivity, which was just there to be stupid.
Yeah. So, you know, I've never really, and you know, once you miss the first two, you can't really.
If you come in at like 6, it's impossible to understand. I mean, aside from you're like, well, this guy's killing this person or whatever, but otherwise you don't. I mean, in fact, it's hard to follow at this point because they've kind of warped in upon themselves. That I've watched them. I've never watched them on DVD. I've watched them every year that they've come out in the theaters. So I'm like 7 years in. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you have that year pass, you're like, wait, what happened? Did this happen in the last? Wait, who's this guy? Now, wait, is that guy still alive? You know, so you do tend to have to kind of refresh your memory. But I think the real star in this one's going to be the 3D.
Right.
Cary Elwes is back, but who cares?
There is that. I find that interesting. He's come back from the, you know, the first movie, which mm-hmm. I'm told he was in.
Yes.
Clearly, I've never seen it.
Yeah. However, a tour de force of awful acting, by the way. He was so awful in that movie.
Really? Oh, I will say this. I'm almost curious at this point to go back and maybe watch them all in
yeah.
a row.
Yeah. I think you should. I think you could handle it. But I would love to see what Neil Miller would be like emerging from that experience.
Yeah, it's just it would be an interesting like for science article where I watch all of the Saw movies.
They used to. I don't think they're doing it this year, but they used to, at least up to like the fourth one or the fifth one. They did a Saw marathon. You could go see like either the week or the night before. You could go see like all of them. But now it's just prohibitively time consuming to go watch. I mean, yeah, you'd have to start at noon to then be able to watch the midnight showing of Saw 7.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I like it. It's the 3D is a total gimmick in this one, and I'm okay with it. I like, you know, it's like kind of like Jackass. It was, you know, hey, I think it's a different way of doing it, and it looks like they're at least going to deliver on the 3D effects in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I guess if there's one thing Saw really, it, you know, it has its fan base, and I don't think it's disappointed its fan base too much over the course of 6 movies, which is really hard to do. Yeah. It's really hard to make 6 movies and, you know, not lose a whole lot of ground.
Yeah. It lost a little bit in the 6th movie, but I think even then, like, 5 movies was just like people went and saw it. And that's partly because I think the writing is relatively decent for just a, you know, kind of a one-shot series. So,
yeah.
It has to get a preemptive suck since they didn't screen it for us.
But yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Preemptive suck.
Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to the next movie?
Yeah, sure. What's this?
Yeah. The next movie
is Conviction.
You're like, I should get a pizza. I'm okay with that, too.
Yeah. What's a movie? Conviction, in which Hilary Swank plays a woman who works endlessly to prove her brother's innocence in a murder conviction from the early 1980s.
Kenneth Waters, you're under arrest for the murder of Katerina Brown.
Are you out of your mind?
We find the defendant guilty, Your Honor.
We'll get you out, Kenny! You hear me?
I'm gonna stop by trying to get a BA after I finally take the stupid GED test. And after that, I'll apply to law school. But you just have to promise me that you'll never give up. If we can DNA test the murderer's blood, it'll prove Kenny's innocent.
It's gonna test positive. I'll find a way that I'll trust them.
You do it, or I'll kill you. Got your sister and your lawyer talking.
Did you see this?
No, I did not see this.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Here's the thing. It's like everything. It's like last week when we had Hereafter, it was the same kind of deal. Every October, November, you can expect to see certain people in movies look going for their Oscar. You had The American with George Clooney. That was his shot. Hereafter was Clint Eastwood's. This is Hilary Swank's. And she's a great actress, or actor. But, you know, like her last movie was Amelia. That was last year. That was her Oscar grab.
Which was just painful to watch.
Awful, awful, awful. And here's the thing with Hilary Swank. She's a fantastic actor. And I remember watching the Blu-ray of Amelia. And they had archive footage of Amelia Earhart. I'm like, wow, she really did nail the character. I mean, she talks like her. Her mannerisms, the way she moved. Just Amelia Earhart wasn't an interesting individual.
It was not an interesting subject.
Yeah. And this one, I don't know. I mean, this very much has a very Lifetime movie of a week kind of feel to it, where it's the woman. But part of the thing is, I'm tired of, there's certain beats you see in an Oscar grab where you're like, oh, this is the scene where she's so upset she literally falls down on the ground.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a scene where she's so mad she throws things around the room. Right. Oh, this is the scene where she's, you know, so put upon that she's going to give the speech like, I'm not going to give up and I don't want you to give up. Get out of my house. Every single cliche is in this movie.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it's there's nothing, it's mildly interesting to watch what happens in the movie, but there's no great surprises. Because, you know, okay, I guess you're not going to see a movie about a woman fighting for 20 years to free her brother and then just fail at the end.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's kind of like Secretariat. You're like, well, you know, it's a story about the horse that wins a triple crown. Boom, there you go. There's the end.
Right. Let me ask you this. Did you know that it was directed by the guy who played the bad guy in Ghost?
I did know that. I did know that. I'm not a big fan of him as a director. His other movie was The Last Kiss with Zach Braff. That's his other big movie.
Tony Goldwyn directed The Last Kiss?
Yes, he did.
Interesting.
You didn't know that?
I did not. I thought Zach Braff directed that, actually.
No. Zach Braff directed Garden State.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I kind of like The Last Kiss.
It was okay, but it pushed the buttons. This movie pushes the buttons.
Yeah.
You know, and it's well shot, and it's relatively well acted. It's actually more interesting to watch because it takes place, it starts in the 1980s, early 1980s is when he's convicted. And of course, she goes to become a lawyer and all that kind of stuff. So you go through all these years, and it's interesting to just watch all the props and try and figure out what year it takes place. And you're like, oh, wait, the cell phones are this size, so it must be around 1997-ish, you know? But I'm also getting kind of sick and tired of Oscar grab movies, Oscar bait movies that have the main characters all have accents. And I'm not talking a Merchant Ivory accent. They're always like either redneck or they're from Boston because they're all from Massachusetts. So it sounds like you're watching the sequel to The Town.
Mm-hmm. They already made a sequel to The Town?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
Anyways, but for me, this movie kind of sucks.
Okay. I can't say that. This movie screened like 14 times here in Austin, and I couldn't go see it for various reasons. You know, because I have other stuff to do in life.
Like eat tacos and drink beer.
Like eat tacos and, well, I mean, I have stuff.
Don't diss
that I
tacos, because tacos are awesome.
Tacos in Austin are very awesome. Yeah. You know, and the Austin Film Festival, I've had to go to that.
Yeah.
I was actually on a panel about film criticism. We'll talk about this in the next segment.
Film criticism.
Where I talked about film criticism with some real film critics.
Like whom?
It's not like my normal this week, you know, where I talk to you. But thank you. Denby from The New Yorker.
Oh, wow.
And Kenneth Turan from the LA Times.
Oh, my gosh.
On a panel with me.
With you. And you don't even see movies. That's what's amazing.
I know. So it was very odd to be talking to those fine gentlemen and to be talking to an audience about the film critic's process.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I was the only one whose film critic process involves taking notes in a Ninja Turtles notebook. So.
Well, that's their loss. That's all I have to say.
It is, seriously. David Denby needs to get with it. Anyway, it's time to
have
time
we burned
to go
this episode out yet?
we'll be back in a minute.
Bye.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment where we just talk about random shit.
And poop. Well, there were a lot of poop jokes in Marmaduke. I was surprised.
It's about dogs, dude. Of course it's going to be. There's poop jokes in Alvin and the Chipmunks. If it's got talking animals, you are guaranteed to have poops and farts.
I actually commented to...
except maybe, I don't know if Narnia is going to have poops and farts.
I commented to my movie-watching companion last night that that perhaps the best date ever would be to go to the junkyard and pee on stuff.
Wow. Did that seal the deal?
who knows?
I'll have to try that sometimes. My 15-year wedding anniversary is coming up in a couple years. Maybe I'll do that with my wife, yeah. We'll go pee on things.
I'm so happy for your wife.
That our 15th anniversary is coming up in a couple years.
That she's found the intestinal fortitude to stick with you that long.
Actually, shit, I think it's next year, next December. We got married in 1996, so yeah, our 15th anniversary is coming up not this year, but next year.
All right.
That's terrifying.
Good for you, I say. It's always good to see strange, chubby dudes like yourself get married, because it gives me hope for the future.
That's true. I am an inspiration to many people.
You are. And your wife's really cool, so that's
always
good. She is
cool. She's awesome. Anyways, let's talk about... you wanted to talk about... Was it the Austin Film Festival?
I saw some cool movies there this past week, and I just wanted to recommend them to you, so I figured I'd do it on the air. There's a couple of very interesting...
Then you can prove that you've actually told me about them.
Yeah, but there were a couple cool ones. One was this movie called Peep World, which is a movie...
Is it about peep shows?
No, not really, but it's got a great cast. It's Michael C. Hall... and Rainn Wilson, and Judy Greer, who was also in Marmaduke, who's awesome.
I love Judy Greer. Oh, my God. I have such a hots for Judy Greer.
Oh, who doesn't, though?
Oh, my God.
And it's basically about this... Oh, and Sarah Silverman is in it. Sarah Silverman's excellent in it. And it's about this family, this very sort of insanely dysfunctional family, and the youngest kid. There's, four kids. And, Michael C. Hall is the responsible one. Sarah Silverman is the crazy, I want to be an artist. I'm still trying to be an actor at 35. Sister.
Playing against type, I see.
Rainn Wilson is like the brother who's been through rehab like 4 times.
Wow.
And is in debt to the mob. And then their father is this horrible, horrible man. Played by, Ron Rifkin. And,
Sloan.
The youngest brother writes a book called Peep World about them, and it just like ruins all their lives. So it's kind
That's
of about them
funny.
Dealing with each other, and it's very funny. It's very dark.
Is it a true story?
I don't believe so.
Oh, okay, so it's not about a guy who actually just writing about his really real family. Okay.
But I was surprised at the fact that it's directed by Barry Blaustein, who directed The Ringer. And wrote movies like The Nutty Professor and Boomerang and Coming to America and Police Academy 2. So it's very interesting just to see to see this movie that is very, very smart, written by the same guy who did The Nutty Professor.
Wow.
So there's that. So I like that one. There's also one called Miss Nobody that stars Leslie Bibb, who's adorable. Very adorable woman who she wants to move up the corporate ladder at a pharmaceutical company, and so she starts killing everyone.
Well, that's
in
one way
very
to do
creative
it.
And cute ways.
Cute?
Oh,
how
totally.
Adorable!
It's the most adorable serial killer movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
And
you know what's funny about Leslie Bibb? I think she's I watched her ever since she was in Popular, the TV show Popular, that Ryan Murphy who did Glee and Nip Tuck did.
Yeah.
But now I have him. She's galvanized in my mind as the wife of one of the characters on The League. Did you ever watch The League?
She's a wife of the character in The League.
She's an ex-wife. I mean, she was in like first two episodes.
Right. She's Mark Duplass's ex-wife in that.
And her big thing is that when she's having sex with him, she has to stick her finger in his butt.
Nice.
Well, and I now, mean, like, every time I see her, I'm just
Ricky
like...
Ricky Bobby from Talladega Nights.
Well, that's true. But I would say I'd be okay with... I mean, I'd be like, you know what? Hey, if it's Leslie Bibb, if that's where she wants to go, I'm not into that, but it's Leslie Bibb. And my wife could join us. And it would be... Because, as we pointed out, she's cool.
Yeah, I guess. but there is... it's sort of... you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Pushing Daisies. Because it had that same kind of whimsical tone to it.
Yeah, and you know, it was just, what was it called
was
again?
Delightful. It was called Miss Nobody.
Maybe I've heard somebody mention I heard somebody reference something as being like Pushing Daisies recently, and maybe that's mm-hmm. what it was.
It very much is, you know. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so it was a lot of fun. I liked it. And then I saw there was something else that I saw that I liked. Nope, that's pretty much it. Those two will be the only two movies that our listeners will ever have a chance
care
to
about.
See. Yeah. You know, it's
oh, cool.
The Austin Film Festival is tough. You know, we've got, I'm still going as of the time of recording, and I'm going to see 127 Hours in Black Swan, which I can report on next week.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, for now, those are the only two that I think will be relevant. There were a couple other ones. It's just, but it's a lot of like little indie stuff that are filmmakers that, you know, will be making movies later in life. That
they're the early efforts. They're the ones that after they have their hits, people dig up and put on DVD.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like I saw one called S&M Lawn Care mm-hmm. that was done by this group of guys from Oklahoma, and they very much remind me of the guys who did Sex Drive, Clark Duke and
oh,
his
yeah.
writing partner and those guys. So I feel like, you know, as soon as somebody gives them some money, because, you know, S&M Lawn Care, it's a very cheap movie, and it looks like, you know, somebody filmed it in their backyard. It's a little bit higher quality than that.
Yeah.
But as soon as somebody gives them some money, they should be in good shape. They're mm-hmm. going to make a good film, and I'll be able to say, yeah, I knew them when.
Wow. Cool.
I discovered them, or whatever.
Awesome. I'll have to check those out if they ever show up.
Yeah.
DVD stack.
But they will never make any money at the box office, which is what we're going to talk about next.
Yes. Well, no, actually, I'm going to, before we talk about the box office and we're going to talk about Paranormal Activity 2, I have an interesting story about Paranormal Activity 2. I went and saw it at 10 o'clock on last Thursday night. It was after we had recorded, so I hadn't seen it. I did not like it, by the way.
Interesting.
I just thought it was kind of more of the same. And it didn't offer anything new and actually offered less. I thought people saying it's bigger, better scares. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's a difference between startling and scaring, and I think it did more startling.
Yeah, you know, that's what I read a very adept review over at the new lifestyle website of the Alamo Drafthouse, the Badass mm-hmm. Digest, Devin Faraci. I read Devin's review, and that's kind of what I got out of it, because I had never seen the first Paranormal Activity, so I was like, I'm not even going to go see the second one. And but it sounded like it was very much more of the same, and that it relied more on the startle effect. You know, it relied more.
Well, they
on...
say it was bigger and more. Yeah, it was just there was louder noises and bigger. Yeah.
Which, you scary. Know, that's never good, especially because the first one, from what I understand, it does play with your mind a little bit. You know, so I don't understand why.
But it did very well. What's interesting, my story was, I went and saw this. I was with some friends, and I tend to have a blow up at a movie theater like once every couple of years. Usually I'm really cool even when people are total assholes. Mm-hmm. And this one I had a kind of a blow up at because we're watching the movie. It's an R-rated movie at 10 o'clock opening night.
Right.
And yeah, there are high school kids and college kids and rude idiots who are chatting because everything like something would happen to be like, oh, did this happen in the first one? Wait, what was this? What happened here? And of course it has a baby in it, you know? And I hear like halfway down the theater, I went and saw it at the Dublin Theater, which actually sucks ass now in Columbus. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the worst theaters in town. And it was one of those flat, it was before stadium seating, so it was real flat, and there was somebody way down in front, and you hear this like 2-3-year-old kid going, baby, look, a baby. And just like, because I got a son that does that too. I don't take him to friggin' movies. And chattering through the whole movie. It's one thing for people to be going, oh, wait, what's Katie doing now? Wait, is she doing that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. That's relevant to the movie. It's another thing to just bring a fucking kid to the movie. And this family, so this guy, as the movie ends, the guy's walking out, and I see the kid. The kid's 2 years old, maybe three. And as he walks by, I go, thanks for bringing the fucking kid.
Nice.
And he's like, yeah, he enjoyed the movie. I'm like, I didn't like hearing him talk the whole damn time. He walks out. And then as I'm leaving the theater, I see him there holding the kid. And his wife's there, or girlfriend. And they got two other kids, all of them under the age of like 7. Seeing Paranormal Activity 2. Now, let's just set aside. I'm not going to be a big, you know, policeman of saying, well, this is not appropriate for kids. That's your own deal. You know, I mean, I show my kids stuff that people would argue is not appropriate for them. And I have my own rules of what needs to be, what if something's in a movie, I don't let them see it kind of thing. You know, if there's like rape or, I mean, sexual assault or heavy drug use, I don't let them see the movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's just goofy, and you can sit there and argue this is inappropriate for like a 6-year-old. And it is. It's not an appropriate movie for a 6-year-old.
Right.
But a 3-year-old, there's no reason to bring a 3-year-old. The 3-year-old's not there going, I want to see this movie. I mean, it's not paying attention and talking through the whole damn thing. So I walk right up to the guy and I go, you guys are assholes. Right there in the lobby. And he starts having words. He's holding his kid. He's having words with me. He's yelling at me. He's like, you know, oh, you just walk away, man. Walk away. He goes, what, you want your $8 back? And I turn around and I go, no, because you obviously need it for babysitting. And literally almost get in a fight with this guy. And finally I left. You know what I should have done? I should have gone up and said to him, I go, you're bringing your kids to this movie? It's inappropriate for them. Hey, kids, guess what? There's no such thing as Santa at your parents. And then walk out.
Spoiler alert for all of our listeners. There is no such thing as Santa.
For all the 8-year-olds that are listening to this show.
We have a lot of 8-year-olds. It's a big demographic for us.
But anyway, so yeah, so I almost got in a fight. But the fact that the guy was holding a toddler probably prevented him from taking a swing at me. Which is good, because I told my wife when I got home, she's like, I'm glad I didn't have to go bail you out of jail. And I had to be on TV in the morning, so...
Well done. I didn't do it. Well done, Kevin Carr. These stories are always enlightening.
But yeah, I mean, I every now and then I have a little bit of a fit in a theater, and that was one of them.
I've heard the stories. So. I've been there for some of them.
Well, what, the Ratatouille one? That was just me bitching.
Yeah.
But I've this guy almost tried to beat me up because I told his wife to shut up during 8 Below. Because, again, she had a kid, and she was talking to the kid. I'm just like, shush.
Seriously. So, yeah. People.
Anyway, right. Speaking of Paranormal Activity, did very well. Its actual numbers were a little lower than what was predicted.
Yep. 40.7 million, 40.6. That's not bad for a movie that was made for $3 million.
That's true. But 42 was what the actual numbers were they were predicting, so it was a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Still beat The Grudge's for what the highest R-rated? No, what is it? Is it the highest horror movie gross opening weekend or something like that?
Highest R.
The highest supernatural.
I have no idea.
Something like that. Which is sad because there's going to be Paranormal Activity 3, more shots of nothing happening. Due out in theaters next year, I'm sure.
Yeah. But anyway, so it did well. Let's just say
it did
that. It did well. Jackass 3D came in second. Red came in third. Hereafter was fourth with $12 million, which was a little bit more than we even expected Hereafter to do. And the Social Network.
Yeah,
was
I was.
So
yeah, I was. I was surprised that Hereafter came in.
What do you think's gonna happen?
So what do you think's
gonna
happen?
I think Saw 3D's gonna run away with it.
I think Saw 3D's gonna do well. I think you're gonna see close to. I wouldn't be surprised if you see. It should top Paranormal Activity's numbers because if for any reason just the higher 3D ticket prices, will it make $50 million? I don't know. But here's the thing: even if it makes $30 million, it's going to be a roaring success, and they'll have a Saw 8.
Right.
But
Saw 4D.
Yeah, I think Paranormal Activity is just going to plummet. For two reasons. First of all, I think it was very front loaded. It was so front loaded it basically made half of its money on the Thursday midnights and Fridays, because it was like $20 million or more for Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday, it really dropped off. I think you're going to see it's going to be like a 70% drop for two reasons. A, it was front-loaded movie, and B, R-rated horror movie at Halloween. That's just going to be preempted by Saw because it's the same demographic.
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if it's 50 for, if it's pushing $50 million.
Yeah.
And then Paranormal Activity. And then, so I think it's just going to be right down there. And I think Hereafter is just going to plummet.
Yeah. I agree. So.
And I predict that Easy A is going to come back and win the weekend. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, jeez. Okay, that was easy. Let's move on to the Fat Guy 5.
Woo-hoo. Fat Guy 5.
We're actually, this is going to be really quick. In honor of the Saw movies and the fact that there's another one coming out, and mostly because I am working on no sleep to record Fat Guys the movies, I've asked Kevin to very simply just rank the Saw movies, rank the top five Saw movies. So yeah.
Keeping in mind there are six of them.
Yes, exactly.
So the fifth best Saw movie is Saw 6, which was the one from last year, mm-hmm. because I thought it you know, it was not as good as Saw 5, which was the next best, which came out previously. And then you shake up the numbers. Saw 3 was the middle one, I thought, because Saw 3 was okay, but it hadn't kind of gotten to a ludicrous level. And instead of just counting backwards, the second best Saw movie was Saw 1. It was the original. It was good. I thought it was a well-constructed movie. Kind of surprised me at the end. But the best of all of them, I thought, was Saw 2.
Really?
Yeah. And first of all, the first two Saw movies actually screened for the press. I saw Saw 2 at a press screening. The reason I was impressed with Saw 2 the most is because when you got to the end, it wasn't a big surprise. Mm. I mean, it was a big surprise how it ended. I thought they really... I wasn't expecting what they did, and I'm like, wow, that's really cool. Yeah. Now, by the time you get to 5 and 6, they could sit there and have Roger Rabbit come out and be like, I actually killed everybody, and be like, it could be, because it gets ridiculous by the time.
Yeah.
Get to later movies, so.
Wait, does Roger Rabbit come out? Because I'll watch those movies right now if Roger Rabbit shows up.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Nice. And then the honorable mention for completist's sake is Saw 4.
Saw 4.
Because it's the only other one.
It's the only one left.
But I find that interesting that Darren Lynn Bousman directed Saw 2 is what you would say is the best. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, good for that movie.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, I promise we will wrap you up and let you go.
Yes, we promise.
And we are wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. As promised, we're going to let you go, free you from the bonds of this show. And we're going to do, as we always do, the world-famous DVD Roundup. And I think we were just talking off the air, Kevin, about how this is probably one of the better months we've seen in a long time for DVD.
Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic month. Not even for DVD, but for Blu-ray. Because people are finally getting on the ball and releasing some great movies on Blu-ray. And
yep.
What's nice is the special editions and the anniversary editions that are coming out this month and related to horror movies, being October. Like, you had The Exorcist... you had Psycho.
And then
Rocky Horror last week,
And what's important is that they all are quality releases.
Yeah, I mean, they're not crap.
They're not just like the movie thrown together on a Blu-ray, slightly upconverted.
We've had some of those, but you're right. Some of these are Rocky Horror. Have you watched the Rocky Horror one yet? Did you get that?
I have not. I did not get a copy of that.
Did you ever watch Rocky? I mean, are you a Rocky Horror fan? Did you ever go do the midnight? Like, have you seen it in the theater, though? Like, in a midnight movie?
No, I've never gone to a midnight of Rocky Horror.
Oh, it's a totally different experience. I used to go all the time in high school. And
yeah.
It's really made for those fans. And The Exorcist was a fantastic Blu-ray set. And the one that...
Psycho was also very good.
Psycho was very good. And you've got the one that you're going to talk about now.
Yeah, we've actually... I mean, between the two of us, we've got two this week. Mm-hmm. But we'll start with the one I have, which is the Back to the Future trilogy.
Yes.
Which looks absolutely gorgeous on Blu-ray.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I mean, some really very cool cinematography in that movie. And it, to the point where, you know, it looks so real. Like, the first shot... The one that struck me is the first shot of the DeLorean disappearing.
Yeah.
In the first movie, it's so awesome. Like, the shot of it actually disappearing as it's driving is so cool. But then they cut to that shot where where they're essentially standing on the green screen, and you can tell it's a green screen.
Yeah.
And it makes it really awesome.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just because that's okay. You know,
Well, it was 85.
It shows off the natural, you know, imperfection of the film and the quality of the effects at the time. But I tell you, watching the DeLorean disappear is incredible.
Well, but also it's what's neat about it from a visual standpoint is you have that it captures that 50s look in the first movie. It captures every look in the second movie, but you also have that Western look. You know, they shot it in Monument Valley. It just has a gorgeous look. And I even said this when I was watching it this weekend, the third movie, we haven't had a really fun Western. Every Western that's come out for the last 20 years has been heavy, dark, and brooding, you know, stuff like Open, which I loved, Open Range, and, you know, like Appaloosa and 310 to Yuma. It's all this really heavy, dramatic. You haven't had a Silverado.
Right.
In Silverado, you know, and Back to the Future 3, I thought, was one of the last movies that really captured that.
Yes. So it's a wonderful set. It's totally worth the money. It's tons of behind the scenes. I mean,
all the old features and new features as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. So highly recommend Back to the Future. Not just because it's one of my favorite trilogies of all time, but because it's a really great set. Yep. And then we've also this week got The Girl Who Played with Fire, which is the sequel to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which you should see both of. Both of are very good. Mm-hmm. Winter's Bone, which is I still feel is going to be a very relevant movie come Oscar time. It's very much precious in the Ozarks.
Yeah.
And then House, Criterion, the very insane movie from 1977 that will blow your mind with how just weird it is. That's basically, it's just probably one of the weirder movies I've ever seen.
Yes.
But the Criterion release is great.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. I need to see that. That's one that I missed. Actually, this month I had a couple opportunities I haven't had a chance to. The ones I want to point out, there's the Clone Wars Season 2, which actually is relatively popular with the younger crowd. I mean, adults aren't wild about it, but kids, it's a great little show for kids. Sex in the City 2, not for kids, for women and gay men.
Not really for intelligent human beings.
Yeah. There's also Elf, the Ultimate Collector's Edition, which it's a little early for Christmas movies, but Elf is such a fantastic film. And it comes in this neat little tin and box set. Legends of the Superheroes on Warner Archive, which is the most bizarre thing. It's the only other time Adam West and Burt Ward have played Batman and Robin outside of the TV show and the movie they made. And it's basically all the Justice League and the Legion of Doom characters, but it's like hosted by Ed McMahon. And it's like roasting. It's the most bizarre thing steeped in the 70s. I watched it when it was on the air for the first time. It's just total 70s cheese, but it's just awesome. And then the Alien Anthology on Blu-ray. Now, this is not the first time all four movies have been put in a set, because they had the Laserdisc come out.
Laserdisc.
They had Laserdisc way back. And then they had the quadrilogy, the Alien Quadrilogy DVD set, which had both versions of every film, director's cut and original. But this one's on Blu-ray, and it takes all the special features from the Laserdisc edition and the Quadrilogy edition and throws them all together. There's something like literally 60 hours of special features to this. Mm-hmm. So you can start now, and you won't be done until next month. So, and then the stinkers, there's a whole bunch of Lifetime Christmas movies. And while I suggested Elf, Lifetime Christmas movies, way too early for that crap.
I agree.
Review wrap up, Saw 3D gets a preemptive suck, even though I kind of want to see it. Conviction gets a kind of sucks. And what do we have coming up next week?
Next week we got Due Date, Megamind, and Four Colored Girls, which will be probably the first Tyler Perry movie that we'll actually get to see. But who knows?
Oh, wow.
In the meantime, head over to FatGuysOfTheMovies.com and you know, check out not only other episodes of this show, but all of the other podcasts we've got going over there. Some of them are pretty good. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend at the movies, and you know, don't get trapped in a trap by Saw.
Wonderful.
Wow. All right. Yeah. We'll be back next week.
We're done.